From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan. Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? This week, joining me are my fellow groundsmen. As always, mowing the lawn by the lake, the great and good Roger Mitchell. Roger, come in.
Hi, Grant. How are you? Good to hear from you.
Very, very well indeed, my friend. Very well indeed. And our third man in overalls, smoking a pipe and leaning on his rake, is the wonderful Giles Morgan. Giles, hi, mate.
Hey, Grant. Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good. Everything's great. It was great to see... Great to see you last week, Giles.
Well, I have to say, I spent 4 or 5 days in the beautiful Lake Como, in and around Lake Como. I even went swimming until Roger told me about water snakes, which slightly unnerved me. I've eaten more pasta, drunk more wine, and eaten more slices of pizza than any man should. So feeling slightly fat as butter. But I'm alive and back in Wandsworth.
Nothing to complain about there, from what I can see, apart from having to spend time with Roger, but you know, we all have our crosses to bear. It's probably worth it just for the pasta.
I have to say, he was the perfect host.
Excellent.
Yeah. Giles turned up with this really good looking girl, and you know, I had to like be charming to make a good impression. But it's funny because, like, you know, Giles was saying, where are we going tonight to eat? Do I need to be elegant? And I said, look, Giles, you're always elegant. And in fact, he turns up and, like, you know, he's got that whole physique du role, Sean Connery type, you know, striding into the restaurant. And behind him, he's got this girl that looks like Natalie Wood. And I thought, this is fine. This will do. It was good. It was a great evening.
There are no words.
There are no words.
And all I know is that Sean Connery is bald as well.
Well, okay.
The few words that came to mind, I've successfully suppressed. Anyway, so that's good. Well, gentlemen, look, I mean, this is the final episode of The Groundsman for this series. I know the two of you have got an awful lot that you want to talk about. Roger, you particularly. So why don't you kick things off and tell us let out some of the bees in your bonnet.
Well, you know, bees in the bonnet. I think it's much more about three guys at the side of a sporting field reflecting on all the noise and trying to pull together the threads. And the best way to do that, I think, is to try and always do it with a laugh at the start. So I'm going to start off talking about meme culture and the example of it I want to start with, Grant, is Harry Maguire in Greece.
Ah, yes.
You may have missed this, Captain, as you were gallivanting on the lake, but Harry got into a bit of a stooshie, to use a Glasgow word, and was arrested by the Greek police. And of course, that can happen, especially us, that we're not very judgmental, and famous people get a lot of idiots coming up to them these days and causing them hassle, so I'm not one to judge. I just want to comment on the fantastic meme culture that comes off the back of that and suggest that that is a massive signpost for where football and sport needs to go going forward. The energy, the immediacy, the wit, the engagement, to use that word, whether it's the Harry Maguire example or whether it's just, you know, watching a sporting event and tweeting in the background on your second screen with your mates, I still believe that for the traditional sports industry, the penny hasn't dropped. I'll come on to a couple of examples later on, but that would be the thing that I think is our catalyst for our lunch break chat, gentlemen.
Well, for me, Giles, if I can, just for me, the only problem I see with that, and I agree with you, is it runs smack bang into the problem of instantly reacting, saying something you think is funny, but using using social media as a forum is incredibly dangerous, because growing up in the UK, no matter what event occurred, no matter how tragic, no matter how unthinkable, no matter what it was, there were jokes flying around within minutes about it.
Yep.
And they were all wildly inappropriate. They were all wildly off color, but everybody that heard them and passed knew that they were jokes, and they were you know, something to make light of a stressful situation or whatever.
Exactly.
It was, right? And you now, if we are in that place, I mean, I forwarded you the joke I got about Harry Maguire, which I thought was excellent. It wasn't remotely distasteful anyway, so I'll repeat it here. The fact that the Greek police had looked at the CCTV footage and awarded Man United a penalty, which I thought was a great joke. But no doubt there were plenty of other takes on that, what I believe are called hot takes in this social media world, which no doubt were hilarious to the people that thought about them and passed them on, and probably hilarious to all the friends of theirs that knew them. But there are other 15,000 followers who don't know much about them. It just gives such an easy outlet for umbrage and upset and offence, which troubles me greatly, as you know.
Well, I think we're living... I think I've been reflecting on my rake and not actually raking as hard as I should be, and for which, please forgive me, both of you. I've had a week off raking, but I have used...
Not much rake's progress there, then.
Oh, very good. And very literary. I've sort of been observing the sports world in a slightly sort of chilled out zone, and come back to particularly many things that Roger wants to talk about today and having a look at all of them. And it feels like there's this sort of paradigm shift that's happened. And obviously COVID has been the catalyst, and we've talked about that endlessly, but the whole industry seems to have shifted on its axis, and I feel a little bit not lost by the industry, but I think the industry is lost in itself, whether we talk about broadcasting, about the point of sponsorship, about how players behave with social media. Everything is a bit discombobulated and it hasn't caught up with itself. And I find it a really fascinating time. All of the things we're going to talk about on this episode, and I suspect future episodes in the next season, is this discombobulation, is that various things haven't caught up with themselves. No one's quite sure where the center of gravity is in almost every part of it, from finance, from how to behave, to sponsorship, to broadcasting. It's all slightly gone sort of akimbo. And I find it really odd.
I think, Giles, you're absolutely right. And we'll come at this from different perspectives in the next hour. But you and I did have that moment, probably with too much rosé to reflect a little bit last week. And I actually am convinced that sport is in this perfect storm, and it's behaving as if it's just a little gale or even a light breeze. And I think this is going to end badly. What do I mean by this? The model for sport over the last 30 years is that you've sold the event, the live event, to a cable or pay TV channel that financed everything else. You were selling, I'm talking about football, but it's the same for tennis, golf, cricket. You were selling the live occasion, the whole amount of it, and it was bought by somebody that had a business model of bundling all of these together. First of all, I think there's so many people now correctly saying that the value going forward is going to be in highlights. Even Hugh Henry said that last week. I think that, the market for the full game is going to get less and less and more niche, and the demographic will get older and older. Then you've got these clients, the pay and the cable guys, that their model isn't anyway as profitable as it was, so they're going to have to make choices. And then, you've got the younger generations and the engagement that they want. And I take your point, Grant, that, it seems to be a dichotomy there between all this engagement that's all a little bit risky and funny and great, and then at the same time, you've got everybody so precious about what you can't say. So I see the financier of sport changing. I see what the fans want, completely different, with much more short form, much more engagement, less 90 minutes sitting in front of the TV. Sponsors will come on to. I honestly think that Giles can maybe shoot me down on this, but looking back in it now, I don't think the sponsorship industry has been great the last 30 years. I think I said to somebody recently, it's a little bit like the lazy, paying the lazy, advised by the lazy, and if you look at the sponsor agency business, really, were they that much different than just marriage brokers? Were they just Tinder and we just didn't recognize it? What were the value were they really adding? So all of these things, to take Giles's point, are up in the air. They're all bouncing off the walls. You add in COVID, you add in that sport is broke and has to go cap in hand to the big finance boys, and this is the perfect storm.
It is, and isn't it fascinating, I think, Rog, that I've been thinking, as I say, a little bit about this. It starts with this discombobulation. Forget COVID for the moment. Is punters, when we grew up, we knew how to enjoy sport. You either went to an event, or you watched it on the telly, or you listened to it on the wireless, and I use the term advisedly. That's how it was for probably 40 or 50 years as television grew up. And obviously the different medium of how television, the different channel availability grew certain sports. But basically it was pretty obvious how you consumed. Now we don't even know how to produce sport because different age groups consume in different ways because of social media. So there's no fixed way even to screen a sport because short form, as you say, highlights is probably more valuable unless you're over the age of 45, 50, and then you want the full biff as we all grew up with. So if you start with the product being discombobulated, it's not surprising that every other part of it, including finance, including media, including sponsors, everybody's up in the air. And let's go a little bit later about sponsorship because that's been my big Lake Como thought piece, which is the sponsorship industry needs to rapidly change because it's looking very, very moribund right now. But we'll talk about that a bit later.
My role in this little triumvirate is to be the pure fan. You guys have a much more business focused.
Well, Grant, it's also to serve tea. It is tea break as well.
Well, yes, fair enough.
Don't put yourself down. It isn't just to mediate. It's also to provide the tea and biscuits. And I've been waiting for 3 fucking months.
I know. Look, listen, I had to wait for the tea to cool down enough so I could stir it. Anyway, I'll leave that one there. Look, when I look at this stuff and you look at what's going on, I mean, you're right, Giles. And sponsorship is definitely going to have to change. My worry is that it instead of changing to something that is sustainable in the long term, maybe we don't really know what long-term sustainability looks like in a sponsorship model now. And maybe they have to try all kinds of different ways of doing it that are geared to this very worrying to me outbreak of short-termism and you know, chop down the game, change the game to suit the audience. That's always my fear with this as a fan is that, okay, how can we make football more exciting for the fan today? What do we have? How do we have to change the game to make it more exciting?
I don't think you need
exciting?
To change the game. I just need to think.
No, I don't, Roger, either.
Summarize what happened and realize.
No, but my fear is that's exactly what they do. They think, well, you know what? The audience is what we need, right? So how do we attract the audience? Well, we need to change the game. And you're seeing it in some ways. Cricket's the perfect example. And we've spoken about this on the podcast before, that they've done it very, very well in terms of adapting. But as they've brought these competing products, you know, the 2020 and the 100 and alongside, you can see test match cricket dying off. I mean, you can watch it happening almost in real time, which, you know, when you're sat at a test match, moves at a glacial pace. But it's happening. And so changing the game to fit the audience, even if you run a parallel exercise alongside the game as we understand it to try and attract the fans, I think is fraught with danger. And I worry that's the way sponsors are going to go.
I know you say that and you're right. We've talked about that a few times. What I think, how I would like to look at it is the closing of a circle, perhaps. When we were in the days before the Premiership, let's talk the 70s, certainly the 80s, sport was a highlights product, certainly football was, and then you slowly got the introduction of live games that then exploded with Rupert Murdoch's Sky Sports in 1992. What I think I'm suggesting, guys, is that I think we may be going back to where we were before, where the live game becomes much more niche, maybe paid for in a more expensive way by those that really want it, and the future, the younger generations, not only enjoy highlights, it's actually their preference. You know, we all of us were so excited when live football came in at the start of the 90s. Now we're kind of like saturated by it. So, you know, what I want to like show you a little bit is that just think about this week about the announcements of two of the big boys, Facebook and Amazon. But let's specifically Facebook. You know, they have put out a couple of products this week, you know, paid online events, which is basically their way for rights holders or content creators to get paid directly for whatever they want to put on out on their pages. And they've got, you know, another fan subscription product, which is, again, a subscription model for communities. And obviously sport is the ultimate community. So what I'm saying is that Facebook, you know, everybody thought, oh, they're going to be the big bidders for the live rights. Look at this. Isn't this great? Quietly, quietly, Peter Hutton, Rhys Beard, they said, no, don't expect a big check from us. We will be working around the segmentation of the fan. We will be working around the long tail as well. And now, quietly, quietly this week, they put out two products that I think are dramatically important. Same week that the Oculus have made a sponsorship, a big sponsorship with, I think it's the NBA. The social boys are seeing the trends that we're talking about here, and they're getting tooled up.
Oh, sorry, Charles. This just sounds so much like fertile ground for you.
Well, I'm digesting what was a fantastic Mitchell monologue, because I think I agree with so much, and I think particularly this, when we look at Amazon, we look at Facebook, we look at what they're trying to do. It's all about segmentation, and it's all about saying it's not the full long form that we're going to overspend for. We're gonna cookie cutter, and we're gonna sausage cut, and whatever other metaphor you want to use, and we're gonna take the bits we want because the value is the fan base and the community. So, again, it comes back to my discombobulation of the whole industry. Is everything's up in the air, to use Roger's expression. And we don't quite know where it's going to settle, or rather the old guard don't know where it's going to settle. And new guard is beginning to start zoning in. We talked a lot about the Jerry Cardinale interview that we did, whatever it was, 5-6 weeks ago. He then goes and helpfully makes a very big announcement a week later. So that was great for us that he really is going to become one of the very biggest players in the global sports industry. Yeah. And I absolutely know from what Jerry is doing is he's not looking at the traditional model or the traditional industry. He's going to be looking very carefully at the various communities where the value is, which is obviously through data and through the new model that's being created through sports. I think we are living in, it's a wonderful way to end this season, where it is not conclusive. You've got to go to the next chapter of where next for the sports industry, because I think it's going to look very, very different. And you're absolutely right. An article I saw the other day is that, for instance, there are a lot of people who say they're in sports marketing, right? Actually, you need to be a marketeer that then specializes in sport, because marketing is a proper discipline.
Yes,
sports
it is.
Marketing is very often
promotion. It's just promotion. One of the P's, not all of them.
Correct. And what sport's waking up to the fact that it is a very powerful vehicle across all sorts of different communities globally for all the reasons we know. And there's an awful lot of sports marketeers who are not actually proficient in marketing.
Correct.
But they're quite proficient in sport, which isn't going to be enough, because the marketeers and the financiers are really taking on the sports industry now because they see the opportunity.
Charles, let me ask you, if there were no sacred cows and you were parachuted back into your old job with that sponsorship budget, what's the first thing you'd do? What's the first change you'd make? What's the first thing you'd do if you could absolutely upend the whole thing and start again from scratch?
Well, I've learned so much since I left HSBC, because I think when one leaves the very comfortable suit, quite a padded large suit it was too in those days, you get lazy. And actually, to Roger's point about the sports industry, I got lazy for a long time, and not wittingly. And I think there was a competence around the sports sponsorship of HSBC, which I am, and I think they are still very proud, and I hope they are. But I do realise that there was an awful lot I did ignore, particularly around the value of the community that one was investing into, and relying very much on, well, if they've seen a logo, that's probably enough.
Yeah.
And it isn't enough. Seeing a logo is nothing. We see logos probably 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 a day, whether it's on our screen, walking down the high street, if there are any left. We see brands all the time. The brands we take notice of are those who do things for us. And I feel very strongly that if I were to go back into my old role or any role like it, the first thing I'd be doing is a very deep dive into the segmentation of the audience, the company I work for, who they were trying to reach. Very deep dive. And most big corporations are quite good at that. But they're not very good at, because largely the sponsorship and sports industry haven't provided this service, is to then match up the segmentation of a brand with the segmentation of a rights holder, whatever that may be, and be very, very much more clinical about it. And it may well be, to use HSBC as an example, you'd still end up with golf. I'm not saying golf was wrong, but that was done on a kind of a media guess, a bit of demographics. I mean, there was a lot of work done. I'm not belittling it. But certainly what I didn't do, and this is my big fail, is I didn't emotionally connect with the 60 million odd golf fans around the world, all of whom would probably have, or a great majority after 12 years and many millions spent, been aware of HSBC. But so what if they're aware? I'm aware of London Zoo. Doesn't mean I go there. So they didn't take it down the line. I didn't take it down the line. You know, but this is my point about the sponsorship industry. I think Roger is right. The potential for sponsorship is so big. Emotion of fans connected with brands that give a shit is a really powerful marketing opportunity. And 95%, I don't think, do it at all. They think the visibility is enough. They think that the corporate hospitality is enough, so the senior management and top clients enjoy that. And it doesn't go anywhere, which is, I've been banging on about this for a little while, and slightly against myself, right? This is my moment of, I didn't do it as well as I should have done, and I was quite well known for being a sponsorship person, whereby I didn't meaningfully connect the fans or the adherents to a particular sport or whatever it may be, and take them on the journey beyond an awareness piece. So I feel so strongly now, as we're going into this complete kind of, it's like, I feel like there's a whiteboard and there's been tons of ink on it for years and years, and it's been getting cleverer and cleverer, and more consultants coming up with more and more ridiculous sort of equations and things to look very, very clever. And it's got, and people are getting more and more self-important, and people's shoulders in their suits are getting wider and wider. And now the whole thing has just been wiped clean, and new people are coming in saying, no, it's all about the fan. And it's all the consumer is the, where the marketing investment is for both media and sponsors. And for the sports, is they sit on a colossal opportunity, which is to say, you've got something that people care about, but it's got to be packaged in the right way.
That's it. And I think the penny hasn't dropped. You know, I think there's all this gunfire and cannons and explosions away over in left field, which is called the battle between Instagram Reels and TikTok, the battle between Facebook Watch and Twitch, which is, by the way, Amazon. You know, what are Amazon going to do with sports rights? Because let's really be honest, they do know the fan. They are the ones in the prime position, pun intended, to exploit that new world that Giles has just articulated. And I just see a lot of sports, and I'm connected to them in a lot of ways through a lot of the work I do with, you know, AI production and Pixelor and a lot of the companies that are involved in the OTT fan engagement world. I see a lot of startups there. And I can tell you, you see rights holders that are still in first gear and they don't know what's going on. And, you know, as I say, I think the announcements for those three products, if you include Instagram Reels, by Facebook this week is lining up the tanks against Amazon, against DAZN that maybe is going to go for an IPO, against Comcast. And I think it is going to be one hell of a battle. And in the meantime, everybody's drinking Pimm's and lemonade. That's what it feels like to me, guys.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, obviously this is a conversation that we are going to keep returning to as the years go by.
Well, Grant, it staggers me, for instance, it absolutely staggers me that rights are still being sold by many rights holders in exactly the same way, which is the TV product with lob a bit of hospitality in. The amount of rights holders I'm speaking to who are not really invested properly in both on-field and off-field data research, proper data research that will change their businesses if they do it properly. They're having to lose headcount, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, a lot of people losing their jobs now.
A lot of people, and people are
good
bleeding.
People.
And good, absolutely right. Good people are going, but at the same time, the cost of investment of this kind of analytics to help shore up and restart the engines. I'm amazed people think, well, no, we do a little bit of data research. We've got a few email addresses all studied. So that's our data warehouse done. It isn't. It's not even close. To know your business is to know your fan in sport. That is sport's absolute, that's the gold of sport. Fans are fanatical. That's the point. They're not like normal human beings.
No.
They become fanatics. That's why they're called fanatics.
And more they want to have their say, which I think is the point I'm alluding to with the technology that allows you to do that. I mean, we ourselves, our little podcast with our fans, you know, we've not been approached because it's a guy I know, the founder of a company called Livelike, who are one of the leaders of this, and they've just done, you know, the deal with the NBA and Turner for the watch parties. And he came to me and he says, look, why don't we try it on Are You Not Entertained podcast? Why don't we let the listeners, small, big number, doesn't matter, but they're all passionate. Why don't we give them a vehicle to have their input? Because more and more, it is a lean forward experience in sport. It's no longer lean back.
Well, this is, I think what you just said there, Giles, hits the nail on the head. Because fans are fanatical, that's both an opportunity and a disaster, right? The opportunity is now becoming obvious from what you're saying there. It's we now have ways to understand that fanaticism and pander to it in very creative ways. But at the same time, for many, many years, because they're fanatical, in the sponsorship industry, so well, we can do anything. It doesn't matter, right? They're going to be back, and they're going to be just as passionate. And they might be leaving in their droves 10 minutes before the end of the game on the last game of the season because the team's got relegated. But we all know what's going to happen in 2 months' time. They're all going to be lining up for season tickets. So what does it matter?
Well, we all know that the greatest moments in human history, in terms of creativity, often surrounded plague. So the Black Death,
yeah,
a creator for much of the
world. The Brentford the other week.
Yeah,
I don't see how the plague was involved in that.
there are no words. But the Renaissance, yeah, I think we're coming into Renaissance now, which means it's going to be.
I agree with that.
Because there is nothing like hunger to bring out the best of humanity. And at the moment, the hunger is people are bleeding, people are nervous, people are starving, and the old model, the fat, are sitting there helpless, and the lean are that. That's why I'm so excited. I've been excited about the sports industry for the last year, because I sense that this kind of downturn, sometimes what's another metaphor? You know, when you raise crops to the ground, you get the greener shoots coming through after the field has been burnt down to the stubble. Then you get very fast moving new growth. And I think that's what's going to be happening in the next year to 2 years. But there's still, to Roger's point, I think there's a lot of people still sitting in first gear, looking around them going, oh, it feels a bit windy out there.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's a fucking hurricane coming.
Yeah.
Well, it's upon them.
Let's take an example of that.
It's playing havoc with my leaves too, by the way.
But not your hair, thankfully.
We mentioned in one of the previous groundsmen college football. Remember, Grant, I said, you know, that's going to be devastating. You said the big colleges, man, they'll be fine and all of that. I think college football is in meltdown. You know, a million articles a day now, even at the big colleges. And, you know, I think as this second wave starts to make its presence known and you look around, I think people are going to start saying, well, are we going to get 2021 away? You know, I'm thinking about, you know, the Lions tour to South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, that's no way a sporting occurrence that can be sustainable without fans in the stadia.
I agree.
You know, so I honestly think that next 18 months, a lot of really worst case scenarios are going to come into play. A massive accelerator. And that's, again, not conference talk. I think it is about, you know, well, do we have a bid from a pay TV company because we're premium rights? And if we don't, oh God, what are we going to do? I mean, it's if the Lions doesn't happen, that's tragic for rugby, you know.
No, it is, Rog, but I think the example has been set by golf, I think, once again, and that is, what's the one event in golf that you absolutely just can't have without the fans there? It's the Ryder Cup, right? Because that's the only time, really, the fans can get involved in it and not have to spend most of the time being quiet. And so golf very sensibly cancelled the Ryder Cup. They're going ahead with the majors. I mean, except the British Open, that was more of a timing thing than anything else. But there you go, right? You can play the events. We can play the majors. The PGA Championship was great, and by the time that came around, we'd gotten used to golf without fans. But the Ryder Cup just wouldn't have worked. And I think you're right. I think it's the same with the Lions Tour. That as a product, as an experience, as a spectacle, is nothing without the fans.
In a former life, I HSBC sponsored two Lions tours under my direction, and whilst the rugby actually for two or three of the test matches across the six test matches that we sponsored effectively over two tours was fantastic. The second test in Pretoria in 2009 is maybe the greatest game of rugby I've ever seen, even though the Lions lost. And to watch a Welsh resurgent Lions team in 2013, and I say that because it was very much a Welsh backline back in the day, beating the Aussies, which is always joyful in Sydney, was a wonderful sporting occasion. But the value of the Lions is not about the rugby match. It's about everything that goes around it in the 3.5 year build up, in the fans, in the celebration. It's the socioeconomic value of the Lions is about the camaraderie of the rugby community globally coming together. Because even if you're not from the four home unions of England, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland, any rugby playing country will be interested in the Lions because it's something different. So there's a real. It's a really interesting one, because Vodafone have come in as a sponsor, which is brilliant for the Lions. And I think Vodafone tend to be a wonderful sponsor in general. They understand data. It's their business.
Yes, ARPA.
And exactly right. And they will be a very, very good sponsor. But they will be, I would imagine, hoping very much that fans will be allowed to travel, because otherwise it's just a TV spectacle, which has a value.
Yeah, but it's not.
But it doesn't have the real value.
But it doesn't. Let's face it. I mean, there's something about seeing all those red shirts 15,000 miles from home. You know, almost drowning out the locals. I just think like the Ryder Cup. I think there was a great decision about the Ryder Cup. I think it's nothing without the fans. And I think the Lions Tour is the same. And my point was, hopefully, there's a degree of self-policing in sport. And the guys at the top do realize this, that there is a difference between some events. And, it, you know, college football is the same, Rog. You know, college football without the fans just won't be the same. And you know, I don't think they'd go ahead with it. And, of course, the demographic for college football is largely college-age kids who are there for a great experience.
Yeah.
But the demographic goes right up to, you know, people who are there to support their alma mater and have done for, you know, 40, 50 years since they graduated. So, you know, college football is one of those sports that I doubt we'll see back. The NFL is different. I mean, that's coming back obviously in 3 weeks' time. So that will be interesting to see how much, you know, that changes, because the spectacle of the NFL and all the stops and all the pauses when you have all the stuff going on in the air breaks, what's that going to look like without a stadium full of people? And it's just
good
you know,
point.
A group of cheerleaders doing
that's
their little
not so
dance.
Bad. That's not so bad.
unless they're the Glasgow Celtic cheerleaders, which might be a whole different kettle of fish. But you know what I mean? It's almost a needless spectacle that they've created around the NFL that without the fans, you can strip all that away and you've got a sporting experience as opposed to, you know, a social experience.
Yeah, you're right. And mentioning the NFL, it takes me on to another thing I wanted to like shoot the breeze with my fellow groundsman. First black president of an NFL team, Washington, I think they're still called the Redskins, but not for long.
No, they're not. I think the new name is the Swamp Donkeys.
They call themselves the Washington Sporting Club, I think.
Something like that.
Which I think may be a holding pattern.
It's a holding pattern. Yeah. But it's the fact that this guy, Jason Wright, a wonderful CV, very young, maybe the youngest ever president of an NFL club. You know, so when everybody, we've said this, well, I'm not going to go back into this, but, you know, there is massive progress going on in terms of diversity, inclusion, and what people call Black Lives Matter. I don't really care that much about the fact that this guy is black. It's a great signal, obviously, but he's young, he's got a really interesting background, and I think that's great news.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it, you know, look, the good luck trying to find a politically correct, you know, Giles, if they put this holding name in there, the Washington Sporting Club or the Washington team or whatever they've called it, I forget now. But once you do that, you shine a spotlight on your process to come up with the name. And it's going to be impossible not to offend somebody. And so instead of just coming out and saying, here's the name and letting people fire direct and forget it, you've now said, okay, we're firing the starting pistol on a process here and you're all welcome to watch and throw bricks in the sidelines. I mean, it's just going to be a nightmare. It really is.
I was talking to a great friend of mine in New York, a guy called Ed O'Hara, who has been a branding specialist for sporting teams in America for 35 years. He really is one of the sort of doyens of this. He's quite an elderly guy now, and so he was asked to speak about the Redskins, and it was fascinating him listening to him both on TV and then talking to him about afterwards. This isn't the first time it's happened. It's obviously the Redskins is of the time now. The zeitgeist happened, but there've been a great deal of colleges that have had to rebrand over history in the last 30, 40 years, which he's been involved with. And on average, it takes 2 to 3 years to come up with the right new brand that resonates both the tradition but also the future with all of the heffalump traps that exist. Because you're right, you can't keep all of the people happy all of the time. And I had no idea quite what an exhaustive process it is. Because, of course, when you think about most sporting brands, they weren't founded by agencies.
Yeah.
Like, I always think of the Open Championship, you know, one of the claret jug. I mean, its history is not, it didn't start up as a major. It became things over time in history. And brands tend to be built up over time in history, where it isn't about, you know, sort of think tanks and people scratching their pencils trying to think of the brilliant creative. It's things that have happened and evolved. And then you get to a point, like with the Redskins, where society has moved on and suddenly things look obsolete or feel wrong. And it's a real problem.
Is it?
Because you can find offense everywhere if you look hard enough.
Yeah, I think it's a real quagmire. And we, I think, have always taken a stance, be very careful what you get into unless you can walk the talk completely. I don't particularly enjoy all this stuff now around this virtue signaling in sport, because you get into things like what happened in NASCAR with Goodyear, you know, that say, we're happy for you to wear a tire that's LBGTH or whatever it's called, and BLM, but you can't do MAGA. Now, you know, that's not...
No, but did you, Roger, but did you see that? That Goodyear came out with a statement after that saying...
Tell me what happened.
I saw that too, and it basically said that. It said, here's what you can wear, here's what you can't wear. And it was basically it was all down political lines. It was like left slogans are okay and right slogans.
That's my point.
For both.
And then Trump comes out.
No, hang on. What happened afterwards?
Yeah.
Because Trump did say boycott Goodyear products, right? Because of this.
Of course.
But what came out after is Goodyear, the president, sent a thing out saying, look, this was, we apologize. This was sent by one person in one branch of our thing. It was their decision to send it to their branch. We don't condone it. We don't, yada, yada, yada. So this wasn't a company policy that was made. This was a manager of a local branch putting it on the company's letterhead and sending it to their employees.
You buy that?
I don't know, but yes, I kind of do. Because just imagine if you were at that level of corporate and thought that was a smart thing to send out. I mean, that it's beyond ridiculous. Michael Jordan, Republicans buy sneakers too, right? No one at that level in the C-suite is dumb enough to pick that side and send that out knowing with social media. I just can't believe that.
Not if you're supplying NASCAR, it's not.
No, I just, listen. The nickname thing is, I'm just grateful to be supporting a team that have a nickname that no one's ever going to make a fuss over. Come on, the cottages.
Yeah, that is pretty weak. It really is pretty weak. Insipid to the max.
Oh my God.
Anyway, where were we, Roger? I think you had a point to make.
Well, no, listen, I was just trying gallantly to try and keep a thread going here with you two. The next thing in the thread is in the same lines, which is about EPL, which is as cricket, as everybody knows. And they are now having significant problems with one of their sponsors, Vivo, the smartphone maker from China. And it's all linked to China-India tensions. You know, so you just got to ask yourself, you know, we started season two way back, if you remember, Grant, talking about the NBA in China and all the stuff that... And then, like, it's all over the place now. And I just want to end this little rant by saying, really, sport, do you want to get into all this stuff? Because truly, I think it's a quagmire.
Well, I agree. And I'm just waiting for the first, you know, man in a suit who runs into this problem to have the balls to stand up and say, listen, this is sport. It's nothing to do with politics. Let it go. And try and distance yourself from it, or at least try that line of reasoning, because you know the problem today is this pernicious creeping of politics into everything, and sport is a place where you should be able to put it aside. You should be able to say, listen, leave that at the door. I get the sensitivity stuff, yes, but the politics side of it. You know, is amped up by the media, is amped up by, do you think anyone following that is looking at their Venmo phone in India and going, well, I can't use this phone because
it's Chinese of what China's doing.
I agree with what you just said. It's where, for me, the Olympics, not always, but 90% of the time has got it right. In terms of the Olympics, it's almost above politics. It sits as a constant. I'm not saying it always has. There's obviously been Moscow 1980, famously when the Americans boycotted. But in general, the Olympic Games has existed because it's as non-political. And the moment politics comes in, it starts to ruin it for everybody. And I've seen that a little bit where, certainly with some of the big multinational financial service companies, sponsorship has a political nuance to it that is never discussed because it can't be. But clearly the purpose of sponsorship is, if it's an investment, is to advance business. And if you don't advance business because politically you're shooting yourself in the foot, it becomes a grey area and a difficult area. And I agree that I think the more that sports can just stand up for themselves and say, we are not taking a political angle. We are going to take the angle that our fans get an escape from the real world, because, again, any adherent of Simon Barnes, author, or Ed Smith, author, as in the England cricket selector, which is, let's celebrate sport because it doesn't matter. And I mean that in a philosophical sense. Sport allows us to go to war without anybody being hurt. Sport allows us to really be enemies with your best friend for 90 minutes and then go and have a beer. Sport enables human beings to release themselves from the daily churn of politics, and particularly now in a very fast moving digital, it's a very hurtful, spiteful world we live in most of the time. Yeah. Twitter being the great example of it. And we're all aware of it. So for God's sake, let's sport be the one thing in human life that allows us to celebrate humanity, internationalism, fair play, triumph, disaster, all of those things. That's the value of sport, surely.
It is. And the value is contaminated when you let these things in. And value these days is more and more important. You mentioned Jerry Cardinale. Jerry's SPAC, Redbird, has made a lot of noise recently since our interview. You know, most people won't have noticed that one of the legend hedge fund investors, Izzy Englander, has taken 8% of Redbird. You know, the SPAC is the perfect vehicle for so many of the sport deals that need to happen. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if DAZN itself isn't bought by a SPAC. That would be the way it would get its listing, if you will. You see other big private equity firms, Arctos, 800 million now under management. Again, coming to the start, I find it so funny that when you have got the serious big swinging dick guys, to use that 1980s born fire of the vanities term, coming into sport because they smell the opportunity, they're not going to put up with a lot of the nonsense that we know goes on, the small time stuff, the political stuff. Just get in there and make some money, you know? That's why I think Jerry has just found this nexus moment. I think they're going to buy a Premiership football team. I think Scudamore has joined Billy Beane in that Redbirds organisation. So I'm starting my book about which club Jerry is going to buy in the UK.
And who are the front runners?
Well, we've already had people, listeners of this podcast, reach out to us and say, we can get you to speak to the people at Sunderland. I don't think Sunderland is the candidate. I think the obvious one still remains Newcastle.
Surely, given that where Fulham Football Club is based at the start of the Oxford and Cambridge boat race, which Jerry I think took part in, surely that's got a bit of emotion.
Talking about proper clubs.
We've already got a high profile American owner.
So I think again, following on from the Kelvin podcast, I think Spurs may be a very interesting one if Joe Lewis wants to sell, but of course, I think the very big plays are hoovering up for a fraction of those enterprise values, the big clubs in the smaller countries, and there's about 20 of them, from Ajax to Celtic to Anderlecht to Galatasaray, etc., Benfica.
It sounds like you're building your own Europa League group there, Roger.
Yeah, but that's where you get your double dip. If I can buy Celtic for 100 million enterprise value, put them into a media market that is equivalent to the big five leagues. Just by that fact, I'll probably treble my enterprise value.
This is like fancy football on speed with entire clubs.
It's fucking finance. I mean, like, everybody thinks finance is accountancy. It isn't. It's buying something and look for an immediate reevaluation. And hopefully there's three or four different levers to get your reevaluation. One of them is the environment in which you play. So that's what I would do. The other one I would look at would be a global women's league. Do that properly. That needs a little bit more operational startup nous, but that's really interesting. But the point is there's so much money and capital out there, mainly coming from North America, mainly coming from guys like Izzy Englander and hedge fund boys and girls. And I just think it's going to be so fun to watch. So much fun, guys.
Well, you won't be quite so much fun if Celtic are the last team picked to the playground on that little list of yours, Roger. But
whatever. That's just a bonus for me. I've given up on hoping there. But yeah, that would be good. That would be very good. I've got one thing to end with, if we're up for it. Something a little bit lighter in the greatest traditions of news at 10. Meanwhile, elsewhere.
Yeah, there's a cat stuck up a tree somewhere.
And finally, yes. Now, I'm bringing into this my favourite boy, who's become one of your favourites, Grant, as well now, Dave Portnoy.
Ah, yes.
Dave Portnoy. Dave Portnoy is the founder of Barstool and has been the leader of the editorial content of the bro culture that has worked so well, also now becoming what I would call a real energizer of golf. If you look at what Riggs is doing, part of the Barstool Sports stable. So that all links into the kind of content that we should be looking at and segmenting your market. That's not the point I want to make. This is a classic story of egos and jealousy. You may have noticed during the week that HBO Sports laid off a lot of people. And in fact, the main guy left. Main guy's called Peter Nelson. And of course, the thing that brought this to my attention wasn't that I saw it in the industry trading mags of sport. I saw it in the following the Barstool guys, because Portnoy posted a tweet, bye-bye, Suitman, with ultimate schadenfreude. And the backstory is this. Peter Nelson was dating one of the top podcasters from Barstool's. The two girls did a great show. I think it was called Go Daddy or something like that. Very, very popular. And Nelson was dating one of them, so much so that he tried to pull her away from Barstool and I think get her to work somewhere else, maybe for HBO itself. And of course, our boy Portnoy didn't take that very well and started having a go and it became a classic media spat. And HBO did a real hatchet job on Barstool and Portnoy himself. So he got canned this week. And Portnoy was all over it in his style that is becoming, I think he's becoming almost man of the year in 2020, Grant, when you think what he's doing in the financial markets, what he's doing interviewing the writers. Did you see that? Where he was interviewing the writers. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I just think it's a sign of the times. Dave Portnoy is the poster child of the times in which we live.
Well, I'm not sure that's a great thing, to be honest, Rog. I admire what he's done, I have to say. I think he's carved out an extraordinary niche for himself, both in sports and in the finance world recently. But I think the sports side of it is harmless. I think the finance side much less so, and potentially very dangerous for people. Well, it's true. You know,
it's true. But caveat emptor, my friend.
Yeah, but A, who knows what that means anymore? And B, where's the accountability? There isn't any, right? So I think you have to separate the two.
What difference is there between him and Jim Cramer? What difference is there, Grant?
No, none. None at all, right? I mean, in fact,
at least
Cramer's
he's cool.
Worse.
At least he's
Cramer's
cool.
Worse because he understands how dangerous what he's doing is and does it just for the entertainment value. So Cramer's way worse. But Portnoy's demographic is potentially much more likely to be hurt by what they're blindly following. Anyway, but let's keep that out of this.
Yeah.
From the sports side of it, you know, I think he's done a phenomenal job in building a brand awareness of himself. You know, it's not my taste, as you know, but I can sit
what they're
back
doing
and admire
for
what
golf,
he's done.
I think you're underestimating what they're doing for golf. You know,
I'm not making a judgment on what he's doing or not doing for golf. I'm saying for me, it doesn't resonate. For me, that bro culture thing is not something that I like at all. But I can still sit back and tip my hat to him and say, hey, look, this guy's done a phenomenal job in creating a brand, a persona, you know, an entire almost genre of sports single-handedly. I mean, hats off to him. He's done a phenomenal job. It just doesn't work for me.
I watched that Twitter clip, and all I could really, having spent some time in the land of fine wine, is that he was drinking a Sancerre and had absolutely no knowledge of how to pronounce it.
Beautifully done, Giles. Beautifully done. Well, gents, I guess that's it for us. We really ought to get back to cutting the grass.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Put out your cigarettes, hide your stubbies, and get back out on the field. So all that remains is to thank you, the audience, primarily, for spending this hour with us, listening to us natter away. Please do take a moment, if you can, to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. It really, really does help. I know I say this every week, but it really does. Please follow us on Twitter if you don't already. You'll find us at EntertainedR, that's A-R-E, the word. You'll find me on Twitter still at TTMYGH.
And you'll find me, Giles Morgan, at GilesMorgan71.
And you'll find myself at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake. Well, gentlemen, hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go. See you next time.
Bye now.
Bye.